Welcome to Whiskey Cask, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 186 for February 8th, 2009. Coming up in a few minutes.
For the amateur who's an aficionado and who really wants to learn how to do this and is ready to spend the money, like, for instance, a golf nut who goes to golf camp for a week and spends 10 grand to stay in a really nice hotel and learn how to play golf in this way, it would be a similar thing.
That's Ralph Arenzo of New York's Tuthilltown Spirits, another one of the micro distillers that are making some of the more interesting whiskeys on the market. And in this case, Ralph is willing to let you make your own whiskey at his distillery, whether you're just a whiskey lover or want to start your own brand. Details in a few minutes, along with some expert tips on how to survive your first whiskey festival and some listener emails. First, let's look at the news. Sticking with the micro distiller theme for a moment, the winter issue of Malt Advocate magazine is out, and it has a special focus on micro distillers. In fact, it's part one of a three-part series on the group that editor John Hansel named as Innovators of the Year in the recent Malt Advocate Awards, and there's a feature on the awards as well. By the way, the magazine unveiled a completely redesigned website this past week that includes John's first-rate What Does John Know blog. There's a link at the WhiskeyCast website. Now that Glenmorangie has finished revamping its regular range of single malts with the release of Astar, Dr. Bill Lumsden and his team are turning their attention to the duty-free range. Sonalta PX is the first in what will become the private collection line of limited edition malts. It's aged in regular oak barrels before being transferred to ex Pedro Jimenez sherry casks for extra maturation. By the way, Sonalta is Gaelic for generous, and the PX is for the Pedro Jimenez finish. It's been a rough couple of weeks for the legal team at the Scotch Whiskey Association. As I've reported in the last couple of episodes, Canada's Federal Court of Appeal has overturned a ruling that could have forced Glenora Distillers to rename its Glen Breton single malt Canadian whiskey. Now there's word from India that the Supreme Court there has dismissed the SWA's request to review its ruling from last year that allows Code India to keep using the Peter Scott brand on its molasses-based Indian whiskey. Meanwhile, there are ongoing talks between Diageo and Indian billionaire Vijay Mallya that could lead to Diageo buying a stake in Mallya's United Spirits. The two sides have been talking for months as Diageo looks to expand into the Indian market. United Spirits controls more than half of that market, and the deal would give Diageo access to Mallya's distribution network and Mallya some much-needed cash. The Scotsman reports Mallya has pledged 30% of his stake in United Spirits as collateral for the loans he used to buy White and Mackay, and Mallya has said he wants to deleverage United Spirits within the next 6 months. An announcement could come as early as this week. Finally, in past episodes, I mentioned the attempt to set a new world record for the world's largest whiskey tasting. Last Saturday, January 31st, in Ghent, Belgium, they pulled it off as 2,253 whiskey lovers tasted six single malts together. The record is unofficial until it's certified by the folks at the Guinness Book of World Records. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. Plenty of stuff coming up over the next couple of weeks. The Brandy Library in New York City kicks off its latest series of spirit schools with an introduction to scotch class this coming Wednesday, a course on precious and rare scotches on Friday the 13th, followed by a class on bourbon and American whiskeys on the 19th. Interwhiskey Munich is this coming weekend, along with the International Malt Whiskey Festival in Ghent, Belgium. The Madison Malt Society's Celebration of American Distilling is also on the 19th in Madison, Wisconsin. Woodford Reserve will hold its first Bourbon Academy class of the year on the 21st in Versailles, Kentucky. The Hokanui Moonshiners Festival is the 21st in Gore, New Zealand, and Whiskey Live Tokyo is the 22nd. Finally, a few weeks ago I mentioned the first Wild West Whiskey Fest coming up in June in Kortrijk, Belgium. The West Coast Whiskey Society now has a website for the festival, and there's a link at the WhiskeyCast website. That's also where you'll find a complete calendar of events around the world, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig Quarter Cask.
Hi there, my name's John Campbell. distillery manager at Laphroaig Distillery. Become a friend of Laphroaig. Claim your own square foot of Islay at laphroaig.com.
If you've been a whiskey enthusiast for more than a few weeks, you've probably had at least one discussion with your friends about just how cool it would be to make your own whiskey. More distilleries are offering whiskey schools now, but the only problem is that you're making their whiskey and the waiting time, and that in most cases you may never get to taste the final product a decade or more later. Ralph Arenzo runs Tuthilltown Spirits in New York. It's just off Interstate 87, about an hour or so north of New York City, and Ralph plans to start offering would-be distillers a chance to make their own whiskey in a lot less time. Ralph told me the idea grew out of his cask sales business.
We have actually offered barrel sales in the past, and they would be ordered through a retailer, and then we would bottle it and label it with our typical label. And where we would normally put the name of the batch in, we would put the client's name in, and then we would deliver it directly to avoid the warehouse, and we would deliver it to the retailer, and then the person would pick it up, and they would get roughly 10 375 milliliter bottles per gallon in oak. So if you order a 3-gallon barrel, you get 30 bottles. It's been very successful for us, and a lot of people have taken advantage of it, including a number of corporate clients who give them out as gifts. And we've applied for the farm distillery license, which by spring, presuming that the state actually does the job it's supposed to do in approving it, we will actually be able to sell our goods here at the distillery, which means that we can offer a way for somebody who wants to make their own whiskey to come here and work with us in the distillery, make the whiskey, and put it in a barrel and mind it, and then come back and bottle it and buy it. I use the word buy, but the purchase is actually included in the price of the program, but we'll be able to technically buy it through our retail opportunity here under the farm distiller's license. So essentially, someone who had a mind to create a whiskey of their own, either for resale or for just their own private stock, could do so. And what we would offer them is they would come up, it would be a 3-weekend program, not 3 weekends in a row. The first 2 weekends would be successive, so that the first weekend would be an introduction to mashing and theory, and we would actually create the mash for the whiskey and prepare it and then get it pitched with yeast. And in the meantime, they're getting all of the information behind it, because they're working directly with the distiller and with all our equipment. The second weekend they would come back, and that weekend, by then, the stuff that they had prepared, the mash, would have been fully fermented and ready to distill. And that weekend would be focused on distillation and rectification. So we would have the stills up and running as a small group of people. We put it into the still, do the stripping run, and then the following day do the rectification run and put it in barrels. And then, depending on the size of the barrels, for instance, we would recommend for the first group 3-gallon barrels, which are ready in 4 months. So then they would come back 4 months later and spend another weekend here, and during that weekend we would pull it out, they would learn how to proof it, we would test it all, they'd filter it, bottle it, label it, take it home.
What kind of cost are we talking about for this project?
It's looking like it's somewhere between $3,000 and $5,000 total. And the barrels are likely to be 5-gallon barrels that we would use. That cost includes all accommodations, first-class accommodations right down the road from us in a very beautiful inn under the cliffs, the Minnewaska Lodge. It includes all meals during the weekend, and, all materials. If, for instance, someone wants to do a private label, meaning they want to make up their own label and have their own brand, we would take care of getting the label registered with the Fed and then registered with the state. It would add $250 because that's the state registration fee. And then they would be able to take it and sell it to others if they wanted to. So, for instance, looking to start a whiskey brand, they would not have to go through the difficulty and the time and the expense of building a distillery getting it licensed and vetted and getting the bonds in place. They could do it all here under our license.
Interesting idea. Have you had any nibbles yet?
Oh, yeah. We have quite a bit of interest, as a matter of fact. We haven't set the schedule yet, and we haven't finalized the price yet because we first wanted to see what kind, you know, how serious the interest is. As in a lot of cases, you know, people make inquiries and, you know, they either find out how much it costs and that it involves three weekends. And so it's really aimed at somebody who really wants to do this. And the value of it is not just the whiskey, which has a value of about $40 to $45 a bottle when they're finished with it. So if you figure 50 bottles out of a 5-gallon barrel, you can, you know, do the math, and it turns into quite a bit of money. It's a couple grand's worth of alcohol. But it also includes all the accommodations and, you know, food, and, you know, it's a full package.
It's the experience, not just the whiskey.
That's right. And the education. Because when they're finished, they're going to know how whiskey's made. And for somebody, for instance, we get inquiries all the time from people who want to build their own distilleries. And once they see what we had to go through to get the place open, we rarely hear from them again. But if we could say to them, you don't have to do any of this. Just walk in here, and we will teach you how to do it, and you can use our equipment and our aging facility, and then we would not have to then sell it to a retailer who would sell it to them, because that's the way it would be under the law now. Because we would be able to sell it to them retail, they could just walk out the door with it at the end.
Would they have to get a wholesaler's license to be able to sell it in stores then, or?
If they wanted to sell it in stores, they would either have to, well, we could do it under our wholesale license, and we could name them. We could, for instance, if you did it, we could list you as one of our agents, and then you would be selling it under our license, and we would be paying the tax. You know, we would add the tax, state taxes and federal taxes to it, and you could get the brand out there. Or if it's good enough, and if it becomes popular enough, or the person has a wide enough distribution network they've set up, we could then turn it over to our distributor if it's of the quality they want, and our distributor is national. So it's two things. For the amateur who's an aficionado and who really wants to learn how to do this and is ready to spend the money, like, for instance, a golf nut who goes to golf camp for a week and spends $10,000 to stay in a really nice hotel and learn how to play golf, in this way, it would be a similar thing. And the second advantage is to somebody who is seriously considering starting a distillery and has no understanding of how to do it, and which we get at least one person a week comes here like that. And they would then have a first-hand experience of having operated one and seen all the equipment that we use and get a list. We would provide them with all the documentation they might need when they leave, or at least the leads to that documentation. And then they would have a clearer picture of what they're up against if they want to start their own brand. And they'd be able to get a brand to market in months rather than years.
There's a link at the WhiskeyCast website for more details. Now, if you've looked at the calendar of events on the website, you've seen events all over the world, and chances are there's one pretty close to you in the near future. If you've never been to a whiskey festival before, it can be a lot like being a kid in a candy store, and just like the kid who gets sick from eating too much candy, it is possible to go overboard at your first festival. While I was in Victoria a couple of weeks ago for the Victoria Whiskey Festival, I decided to ask some of my friends to share their advice with you. Davin DeKergamo of the Malt Maniacs is a veteran of many festivals.
Well, things I do, be sure I have lots of water with me and drink water while I'm there. I avoid foods that are spicy, avoid garlic, onions, and so on beforehand, so my palate's fairly fresh. Don't fill up on the food. You know, if you're a little bit hungry, the whiskey tastes a little bit better. Don't try to taste everything, and, you know, take small amounts. Just savor it, smell it, and, you know, take it down. It's not, you're not there to get drunk. You're there to enjoy the whiskeys. If you don't get to everything, who cares? Enjoy the little bit that you can, to the full extent that you can.
And it's perfectly okay to pour out what's left of a sample after you're done with it. The distiller's not going to be offended.
They very much encourage that, yes. They want to avoid drunkenness, but also you want to sample as many as you can. And so, yeah, take a couple of sips and then pour the rest in the dump bucket and go on to the next one. I also think it's a good idea if you're at a stand to ask them if you can start at the bottom and work through the whole range so that you get to taste, you know, the basic spirit, and then you taste the as they get older or, you know, they have different vattings and so on. So, yeah, but definitely throw it out if you know, after you've had a couple of sips.
But again, it's also okay if you've tasted, for instance, the Glen Googly 12 and 15 year olds, but they've got something different. It's okay to say, I'm very familiar with these. I have these at home. What else do you have that you would like me to try if I've already tried your basic whiskeys?
So, yeah, for sure. You can do that. You're talking about people going to their first tasting, so I thought maybe they wouldn't have tasted all. But yeah, if there's something specific you'd like to taste, or if you say, you know, I've tasted mostly these whiskeys, what have you got that's unusual? Or what have you got that's new? Something like that. Yeah, sure. You should be your own guide, but just don't try to taste everything. Take enough that you can enjoy it, and don't get your mouth in such bad shape that it really doesn't matter when they finally pull out that great 40-year-old whiskey that you're too burned out to really appreciate it.
Now, one of the things I do on the day of a festival is start drinking water several hours in advance. Remember, drinking alcohol leads to dehydration, and hangovers are actually a result of your brain tissue becoming dehydrated. Of course, hangovers are also caused by drinking too much to begin with, and that's one thing you really need to avoid. Remember, you're there to learn about whiskeys, especially ones you haven't tried before. Joanna Ngoh runs the Spirit of Toronto Festival each May, and she suggests doing some research ahead of time.
I guess I would say to try and figure out who's going to be at the show exhibiting. And get an idea of what products you want to try, because honestly, 3-4 hours is not very much time. People often run around from table to table trying to try as much product as possible, and you don't really appreciate what you're tasting after, you know, your 12th dram. So I think I would say do a bit of research, find out what you're curious about, and try and focus on maybe hitting like 6 different products or 6 different distilleries. I think that would be my first piece of advice for someone who's going. The other one would be simply pace yourself and eat lots of food, drink lots of water. It's quite easy to get overwhelmed, get tired, then be asked to leave, unfortunately.
And that does happen occasionally?
It does happen. And I know at our show we don't give any refunds. I've been asked. But we can't get refunds if you've been asked to leave.
Okay. What did you learn from going to your festivals that helped you make your show better? What did you learn that after the first couple of shows you said, okay, before I go to this festival, I got to do this, this, and this?
You know, I only went to 2 festivals before we actually did Spirit of Toronto. Yeah, I went to the Hague Festival, and I went to a Whiskey Fest. And after that, we did Spirit of Toronto. I mean, those were much bigger festivals. I mean, a lot more tables. I think Whiskey Fest, that one that we went to, there were at least 60 tables. It was very, very busy. We took in a master class, and after that, there wasn't a lot of time. So that's where I realized you have to really focus in on a few tables that you're interested in, a few distillers. If you have any questions, or have them ahead in your mind, because you're not, a show this busy as that, you're not going to have a lot of time to be able to talk to people. They've got too many people to try and see, so have 1 or 2 key questions. Have your glass out, try your whiskey. And I think I like to sort of get my dram poured and then go off and try and find like a more quiet corner so I can really nose and appreciate it from that point on.
Festivals are a chance to try whiskeys you probably won't find at your local bar or retailer. Every time I go to a festival, I find something I've never seen before. Malt maniac Lawrence Graham not only goes to festivals, but organizes the Victoria Whiskey Festival each year.
I look for things that I've never had before. That's always an interest to me. I'm always keen to find out smaller distilleries that don't have the big reputations, because I know that every distillery is capable of producing stunning whiskeys. And sometimes they're in their warehouse, and sometimes they get bottled, sometimes they don't get bottled. But I know that everybody is capable of producing those really world-class whiskeys. And so I like to go and see them, and I know that the whiskey experience isn't just about the big-name whiskeys. It's about the little-name whiskeys, too. And, you know, I think it's a big whiskey family, and everybody needs their time to shine. And so I look for something a little different. And the independent bottlers, especially in this part of the world, offer a range of whiskeys that we wouldn't normally see. So like Little Mill or Strathmill and distilleries like that, which we don't see in official bottlings, and they show up in the independent bottlers. And this year we've had four independent bottlers, and three of them have had a lot of single cask offerings that aren't finished in any way, so you get a better crack at the distillery character. So you get a better idea of what the distillery's all about. And the other side of the coin, the other independent bottler, they've done some finishing, and that's added an extra layer of complexity to those unusual distilleries. So they both styles offer something for the festival goer.
Besides getting drunk, what's the worst thing you can do at a festival?
Show up with a lot of perfume on or aftershave, because, you know, a lot of appreciation of whiskey is about nosing. And when you have somebody who's marinated in their scent, then it can really ruin it for other people. So that's one of the no-nos of festival going.
What are the other ones?
Well, it's getting drunk, and I think getting drunk, that's the worst one, because, you know, then you're there just there to drink, and you're not giving the distiller the chance to tell you about his whiskey, which is really why he's there. And he's not there to give you a drink. He's there to tell you about his product.
Let's get the distiller's point of view. Ewan Mitchell is managing director at Aaron Distillery and travels to festivals all over the world.
One thing that people should always bear in mind, that it's a sampling event. It's an opportunity for people to sample lots of different whiskies. So they should come with a plan in mind if they see the program of the event. If there's some whiskies there that are really at the top of their list, they should seek those ones out first of all. But they should remember always that it's a sampling event. So just take a small sample. It's to get an indication of the style and flavor of the whiskies involved. You know, it's not a drinking event. It's there an opportunity for people to sample a great range of whiskies, so that obviously, you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to work out that if you consume too many too quickly, you're not going to have a great deal of enjoyment over the course of the night. But have an open mind, and I would urge them also to not just to stick to the names that they've heard of, but to try a lot of the more unusual and less well-known malts and blends as well, because there'll be some real surprises for them out there too, I think so.
What's the one lesson you learned at your first festival?
The one lesson? Definitely pace yourself, and, you know, take... Don't go at it hammer and tongs. Take a break. You know, by and large, there's always food on offer, so take a break. Have some food. Give your taste buds a break. Drink plenty of water, and enjoy.
If you've noticed, every single expert recommended drinking plenty of water. During a festival, I make it a point to drink at least one full glass of water for every 2 drams I sample. Of course, the most important thing you need to decide on before the festival is how you're going to get home. Driving is not an option, even if you spit out every single sample. I hope this has been helpful. A lot of it's common sense. But to be completely honest with you, common sense and whiskey don't always go hand in hand at the time. Finally, thought I'd share a few comments that have come in over the last few weeks. Dr. Rajan Talwar of New Delhi, India, sent me a photo he took at Blair Athol Distillery and wrote, "As a whiskey lover for over 2 decades, your efforts have educated and entertained me beyond measure. I have to drive more than an hour to work every morning, and I usually listen to the podcast on my way there and back. It makes the drive more tolerable and even enjoyable. Thanks, Doctor." Merle Giles of Champaign, Illinois wrote, "Mark, love your podcast. I am now wondering whether you might create an iTunes application for the iPhone and iTouch. I can imagine having your ratings list at my fingertips when sharing with friends, a list of whiskey fests around the world, background technical tips, photos, history, and more." Well, as I told Merle, my programming skills are nowhere near good enough to create an app for the iPhone. I need all the help I can get with the website as it is. However, I am looking at creating a stripped-down version of the WhiskeyCast website that would be designed just for mobile phone browsers. I'll keep you posted on how that comes along. Finally, Quentin Hodgson posted this note on the WhiskeyCast Facebook page. I've been listening to your podcasts for more than a year now and wanted to thank you for bringing all the great stories, profiles, interviews, and now tasting notes to the public. I've learned a lot from listening to the podcasts and gotten a greater appreciation for the dedication and passion whiskey makers have for their craft. Keep up the fine work. Thanks, Quentin. And if you're a Facebook user and haven't checked out the WhiskeyCast page yet, it has a forum for discussions, as well as my comments about each episode and a few photos from some of my trips. As an incentive to check the page out, I'm going to let Facebook users decide the topic for the next episode. I'll post details of two interviews on the wall, and your choice will air on the next episode. You can also sign up for my Twitter feed and get updates when I find out about new whiskeys, special discounts for listeners, and occasional random thoughts. There are links for the Facebook page and the Twitter feed at the WhiskeyCast website. And that's also where you'll find the calendar of events, my whiskey ratings, the WhiskeyCast store, and a complete archive of past episodes. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2009, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.